I'm Jeremy Greer.
I'm Chris Mosier.
And this is Non-Human Biologics, the creepy but necessary podcast that crashes in one country, gets kidnapped to a different country, driven across that country, only to be still found by Mulder and Scully at the end of the episode. We're back, everybody, here to talk about a very significant episode, it seems like, of The X-Files. Mm-hmm. This is a very heavy myth arc episode, not written or directed by Chris Carter, which I was surprised to see.
Interesting. Yeah, this one definitely stuck out in my memory. Not the ins and outs of it, but like where we ended up with this, I thought, oh yeah, yeah, this is when I was getting really into the X-Files watching this episode.
It's one of these, so we've gotten confirmation that Ryan Coogler is probably going to reboot the X-Files with Chris Carter's blessing. And it's episodes like this that make me think it's just going to be fucking impossible to do that with any kind of like... Without it being just so tonally different as just to be just like a normal supernatural TV show in the 2020s, right? Like, because this is so focused on conspiracy theories and government cover-ups, and that stuff is so tainted now, as we've talked about in the past, of like, it just bleeds into like the right-wing QAnon, you know, all of that bullshit. Like, it would be so easy to get into that area. And it's episodes like this that make me think that it's almost going to be impossible to adapt that for a modern era. Like, I just don't think that you can really pull this off without leaning into the politics of it. And that's something that X-Files seems to be doing pretty well. Like,
that
we don't get into like left versus right. We get into secrets versus not secrets more than anything. And I don't know that they can do that in the modern era. I'm kind of curious.
I'd be very surprised or shocked to see somebody pull that off, you know, but who knows? This is the first I'm hearing of this reboot, so that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested in it, and I'll definitely give it a watch. But it's, you know, it's not going to have the two main actors. Like, that's already huge downgrade. Like,
right.
Like, if you rebooted Supernatural at this point without, you could probably do it without Sam, and I'd be fine. But without Jensen Ackles, I'd be like, what are you doing?
Well, like, they wrote him out in like season 8, so it doesn't matter.
That's true. Yeah, he's not even on the show anymore, basically, after season 8. Before we get too far in the episode, we want to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/monsterofthe week. Also want to thank Sydney Dean for our very, very cool art that we have. You'll be seeing that on our merch store over on TeePublic. There's links to all of that stuff in the show notes if you want to check it out. But she created a very cool like banner of all of our three shows that we've done, the three major shows we've done, all of the like pairings in that show. So it's got Dean and Castiel, it's got Arthur and Merlin, and in the center it's got Mulder and Scully. And they're all just like hanging out. They're not like necessarily smooching. I'm just saying, like, if you're not necessarily the shipping type, it's still a cool fucking vibe. Like, you can still get into it. But also, if you're a shipping type, then they're absolutely all in love. So thank you to Sydney Dean. Go check out, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to all of her stuff. She is a wonderful illustrator. She did all of our Still His Kingdom Keeps art. And it is, I'm just so impressed with her throughout. I've bought stuff like from her just like in general now.
Yeah. Same.
So, Chris, why don't you remind us what's going on in The X-Files?
All right. Last time in The X-Files, Mulder is taunted and haunted by a case from the past when a man thought to be dead returns to get his revenge. Through the power of salamander science, this killer has regressed his aging and grown a weird new hand, and the government wants those salamander powers, even if it means letting this killer walk free. But in the end, Mulder is able to face down his past, and he and Scully are able to take down the perp.
We are covering The X-Files, Season 1, Episode 17, EBE. After a downed UFO crashes near Iraqi airspace, Mulder and Scully follow an unmarked truck carrying the UFO's occupant. This was written by Glenn Morgan, James Wong, and aired on February 18th, 1994, directed by William Graham from Hannibal fame. And we're going to start out, just like we talked about, in the skies of Iraq. Present day, where we see a fighter jet kind of seeing something weird, nothing on his radar. The base doesn't see anything. It disappears. There's a huge flash right beside him. It seems like he's under attack, and somehow he manages to like line up a manual rocket shot and hit this thing.
He announces that he's locked in, and he takes the shot.
He is locked in, which I was very happy to hear in the first 5 minutes of this episode.
Yeah. So we see this, you know, this aerial incident occur. We don't really know what's going on, but there's a crash. We don't see this crash until we see it from the perspective of a military base on the border of Turkey, where I guess these are U.S. soldiers stationed there.
This is NATO.
This is NATO.
There are U.S. soldiers, but this is a NATO operation.
Gotcha. And they go out to investigate this crash.
And everybody knows what NATO stands for, right? We don't need to explain that.
I don't think I do know the literal national
American.
American
trade
organization.
Sure. I think it's the North American, maybe, or who knows. It doesn't matter for this. I noticed in this episode that there's especially
North Atlantic Treaty Organization.
Yeah, sure, we were close. North Atlantic, North American, same diff. We're not uneducated. It's just changed over time.
It's tough when you know the general gist of something, but then when you really realize, like, oh, I actually don't know what that specifically means.
I'm just saying, when I came up, there was not this new math. Okay, now they've got the new math.
We didn't have all this stuff.
And NATO stood for something different back then. That's all I'm saying. When I was coming up, it stood for something different. How do you even do this new math? I don't understand it. Why are we making our kids do this new math, Chris?
I can't even do the old math.
I'm really bad at the old math. I did note that there was some like real blurry footage in this episode. Did you notice that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, just like right here when we get the truck.
I've noticed that in older episodes, though, where it's just like the very old camera footage that maybe didn't upscale to HD with the rest of it.
Maybe that's what it is. It just looks out of place. But like this, when the truck is going down the highway, I was like, wow, this is... I can see how many P's. There's like 4 P's to this instead of the normal 1080 P's or 1080 P's. But we jumped to Tennessee. We're following a truck driver who's listening to the radio. He's got a shotgun on his passenger side, and his radio dial starts a spinning, which we all know means aliens.
I like that this is presented the same way in the first episode. There's a pretty consistent through line of how these things react to the presence of UFOs, and it's not just a different reaction for each different UFO that shows up or anything like that.
The radio eventually, his whole truck doesn't shut down, not yet, but eventually it settles on a station where folks are like calling in and talking about seeing all of this weird stuff. Like, and it seems like there's a lot of it happening. Like, you get the impression that like there's an emergency going on, a cop passes him, and then all of a sudden his truck just completely shuts down. He's barely able to get it to the side of the road without it like crashing or anything. He grabs his gun, grabs his flashlight, and he starts to look up to the sky like he's worried what's in there. That's kind of our first sign of like, this isn't a normal truck driver. Like the gun, probably, I could see a truck driver carrying a shotgun in the passenger seat, no big deal. Can't imagine that happening in 2024, actually, to be honest with you. But him actually looking at the sky like he's afraid is like, oh, well, he must know something is up.
Yeah, there's something going on here. And I was almost a little confused here. I have a lot of questions about this episode because something seems to come out of the back of his truck, or he fires into his truck, while there's some, you know, craft overhead. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, we're going to learn that, there is actually, like, he's carrying around an EBE, which is an extraterrestrial... Oh shit! I just heard it today.
I wrote it down later in the episode. Okay. But
it's an ET. There's an actual alien.
I think an extraterrestrial biological entity.
There
maybe.
We go. Yeah, non-human biologic is what we got here.
That's what it is.
It's a non-human biologic. We're gonna learn that he's got an ET up in there. So the ship is coming from on high, and he's worried about letting this ET go home. So he doesn't want the ET to go home. So instead, he shoots it with a shotgun.
Yeah.
Or threatens it with a shotgun, or maybe shoots it. Who knows?
He opens fire. Mulder finds the used shells on the ground, because that's what we go to next. Is Mulder and Scully investigating the area where this took place? We see him doing a little trick with his stopwatches that we'll talk about in a minute, I guess. Scully is running over the situation. And she's coming up with every feasible, logical explanation that she can think of. You know, it was struck by lightning. It was this. It was that. And I love that Mulder just keeps kind of like distractedly going, it's feasible. It's feasible.
It's possible.
She's like, swamp. Maybe it was swamp gas. It causes this reaction when it does this or whatever. And he's like, that's what happens to me here after I eat Dodger dogs.
Dodger dogs. I'd love to have some Dodger dogs right now. Don't even really know what a Dodger dog is. I'm assuming it's a hot dog at a baseball game.
That you get at Dodger Stadium. That's all I can think of.
I do like that this is kind of a reversal of their normal dialogue. As she's like, because usually it's him saying stuff and her saying it could be reasonable or feasible or whatever. But eventually he's like, you know, all of that sounds like feasible, but like, why would swamp gas get people in three different counties all worked up? Like, what we had phone calls from across the like this whole section of this state. Meanwhile, he's running tests. He's got the radiation gun out. It looks like he's got two stopwatches, and the stopwatches have now recorded different lengths of time since they've been there, showing that like just something is going on. Something weird happened here, showing that this is an authentic UFO visit.
So this is all pointing to aliens. Let's be real.
It's aliens.
Aliens. So we cut over to their interview with the truck driver. We get his name. I wrote it down later, but I didn't write it down here because I didn't realize he was going to be so essential to the episode.
It's a fake name anyway.
Expert podcasting.
I want to say it's Frank Druce, maybe. That's the only person that's credited.
That might be his real name. That's probably his real name. Yeah,
well, it's Peter LaCroix is his in real life name, but Frank Druce is the actor name.
Well, when they figure out what his anyway.
Gotcha.
So they're talking to this guy for a while, and they're questioning him. They're trying to figure out what the hell is going on. What did you see? He starts describing a flying saucer, and they push him on that because last night you described it as cigar shaped. So he's already throwing out some discrepancies. Things aren't adding up here. And then he starts coughing uncontrollably. He doesn't want to play nice with him. Scully tries to give him water for his cough, and he's like, nope, not happening. He's just very suspicious. He's very put off by them. Scully asks if he has Gulf War syndrome, and he says, no, I wasn't in the Gulf War.
And he says he's only had those symptoms since last night, the UFOs gave it to him.
And Mulder asks him, how long has it been since you haven't been yourself? Don't quite know what he means by that. But then the police chief comes in. He lets the trucker go. And then he's like, we're not cooperating anymore. Get the fuck out of here.
This poor guy. This poor Vancouver. This poor Canadian that they made talking in a Tennessee accent.
Yeah,
I was sorry.
Is he British? What is going on here?
I mean, they just got a real Jeremy in the frame when it comes to accents with this guy. Luckily, he's not. He's only here for a few seconds. But boy, it's a terrible time. So this chief says hey, we're letting this guy go. The truck has been cleared. We're refusing to cooperate with the FBI on this case any longer. Basically, get the fuck out of my town. So they head back to the rental car shop to drop their car off and then talk about how often soldiers see UFOs during combat. The only notable thing here is that Scully lends her pen to someone at the table and gets it back. So that's just kind of something.
Oh, my God.
What?
I forgot about that scene because I remembered thinking about it at the time. Thinking, oh, that's odd that she had to loan her pen. What's the deal with that? And then later we find out that her pen is bugged.
Yep.
But I just didn't... I forgot about this scene later on.
A little spycraft for you, which I really like.
Ooh, fun.
But they're talking about how UFOs, soldiers often see UFOs during combat, and they decided to head back to Washington, where Mulder is going to meet up with his people at the Lone Gunman, who have a lot of crazy fringe ideas, even we might say spooky ideas. This is not the first, I get that, because in the credits it says next to all of these three people, first appearance, so I'm assuming that we're going to get a lot of the Lone Gunman. I don't remember this at all, so I'm pretty excited.
They got their own spinoff show.
Did they really?
These guys were, I think it's just one season of The Lone Gunman. That's just what it's called.
Are we gonna cover that on the podcast?
Well, I guess we'll see. I think people were already asking us, are you doing the spinoffs? We're like, well, we're only three episodes into The X-Files. I don't know.
Spinoff is a television show that aired on the Fox and featuring the characters of the same name. I'll be damned. Look at this.
Yeah. So they're clearly popular characters. But they're your typical, one dude looks like Garth from what's it called? Oh my God.
Wayne and Garth? Are you talking about?
Is that what I'm thinking of? What are they called?
Are you talking about Garth Marenghi? Are you talking about
I need a minute. Yeah, from SNL.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Wayne's Party World, on. Right? Wayne's World, yeah.
Okay.
Wayne and Garth.
His name's fucking Garth. I was just looking for his last name, and I was I guess Garth's last name isn't a prominent feature.
It's not a big part of the show at all, no.
All right, sorry. Anyway, yeah, they all sorts of wild vibes in here. One guy wears a suit. He's the real prim and proper. One dude looks like the rocker. The other dude looks like your typical computer nerd or whatever. Mm-hmm. They've covered their bases here, and they're hitting up with different conspiracies. I had lunch with the guy who shot JFK. I did this. I did that. The one dude just Frohickey. He just keeps saying how hot he thinks Scully is.
Yeah, anytime she opens her mouth, it's this chick is really hot. To the point where even Mulder has to be hey,
settle down.
One dude gets a $20 bill. The prim and proper dude gets a $20 bill from Scully to prove that the government is tracking her, and pulls out a tracking strip, destroying the $20 bill, which
is what the fuck? That's my 20.
Which is a federal crime, as Mulder points out very hilariously. And she's like, "That's not a tracking strip. That's a counterfeit measure." And they're like, "Yeah, but other countries put that on the front. Why are we hiding ours?" She's like, "I don't know, man. Ask the Treasury. What are you talking about?"
Yeah. She diagnoses them as the most paranoid people she's ever met.
Yes. Mulder begins to ask about the Gulf War syndrome, and they kind of laugh off the idea that it could even possibly have come from aliens, which seems like like, I don't know, like, it seems like a good idea to me. Like, if in this environment, like, what's a bad idea that gets laughed out of the room? Like, why does this get laughed out of the room and nothing else?
It's just
does?
Interesting, like, that Mulder's ideas are often considered more far out than people like this.
And that's what the show is trying to set out to prove. It's just hilarious to me, like, that these, like, fringe experts are like, haha, Mulder, you're crazy. You're so spooky.
Yeah. Like, what? Guys. So afterwards, Mulder and Scully are back at their office discussing this stuff. She talks about how paranoid they are, and she says, you know, nothing they've said is even remotely plausible. And Mulder's like, oh, I think it's remotely plausible that someone could think you're hot, Scully. Like, is he flirting, or is that actually an insult?
I think that's maybe a little bit of flirting, and maybe just a little bit of observation. Very cute. And as she's, like, kind of writing this stuff down and talking about how, like, they're so paranoid, the pen runs out of ink, and because this is 1994, she doesn't just grab another pen. She, like, opens it up to refill the ink, I guess, and they discover a tracking device inside the pen. I don't know that for sure that it came from the lady at the rental car. I just think that makes the most sense, like, that someone grabbed it.
I mean, they drew attention to the pen, so, you know.
And then now everybody is super paranoid. Like, Mulder goes home. He starts shining a blue light through his window because that is the signal that he wants to meet Deep Throat. So eventually he gets a phone call. He's hung up on immediately, but it's a whole setup to meet his old buddy Deep Throat, where they immediately start talking about baseball tickets. And then Mulder's like, what am I into? And Deep Throat hands him this really thick envelope, and then kind of leaves without really saying anything, warning Mulder that he's on a dangerous path. And in this envelope is the entire report on the UFO being shot down in Iraq and landing on this Turkish border and us basically getting it and bringing it over here.
Yeah. So essentially, he's reviewing the cold open. He's reviewing what we saw there. And that's when Scully comes in, and reports that the truck and Ranheim, I think is what I wrote, isn't it? The truck and the truck driver, it's bogus. There's a cover going on here. He was supposed to be carrying like 3,200 pounds of auto parts. But he had like over 5,000 pounds worth of stuff in his car, and the way stations were lying about it. His real name is Frank Druce. He was Special Forces, Black Ops. Like, there is a lot going on here. And that's where Mulder connects that with what he just read to he's escorting this wreckage and the bodies from this Iraq crash to a facility in the U.S. somewhere.
Correct. Yeah. So, and they know. And this is where we kind of get into a little bit, because she's like, how do you even have this information? Like, what is your source? And Mulder is like, hey, look, this is the only guy I trust. Like, this, I can't give him up. He hasn't lied to me yet. And she's like, well, but it seems like he could be behind everything, and says, even like, Mulder, you're the only person that I trust in this organization. Mm. So, like, if you trust him and I trust you, like, I'm going to go along with you on this. And at this point, they know the truck is headed to Colorado. So they're going to arrange to meet up in front of it. And we do some more. Oh no, we're not quite there yet. I'm sorry. First, Mulder has to go home, where Deep Throat says he's cut the main breaker wire, and I'm like, that's extreme.
Dude, that's so extreme.
That's
unnecessary.
That's an electrician visit. Like, that's a $500
bill. Unplug it, dude. Unplug it.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't just
flip the breaker off. Like, what are you doing? Like, what kind of monster are you? Like, I mean,
right.
Just
Jesus.
Like, I don't own this place. This is a rental.
this is a rental, dude. Now I gotta fucking call my landlord.
Yeah.
You know what that's like? That guy fucking hates
me. That dude sucks. He hates me constantly. At least just ribs me all day long just because I broke up with his daughter at Ruth's Chris. Who cares?
Who cares, man? Get over it.
Can't go back to that Ruth's Chris anymore either. It's really disappointing. It's really close to me.
So this guy's caused me a lot of trouble. Now I gotta fucking call him.
Deep Throat says that they have spotted 17 UFOs over Georgia, basically saying that this is where where Mulder should go next. And they're because they found this, there's a picture that was taken. He's going to get the picture in just a second. And they're wondering if this is like the UFOs watching for the one that was shut down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this time, as Deep Throat leaves, we get something we haven't seen before, which is Mulder kind of stops him. It's like, hey, thank you for your help. Like, you've been really great to me, and I really appreciate it. Like, I guess trying to ingratiate himself a little further, even though he's probably starting to have some doubts now that him and mm-hmm. Scully have talked about
Scully
this.
Scully planted the seed. That's an important thing too, because Mulder has basically never doubted this dude. Like, he's been so desperate, or especially at the beginning of the season, he was so desperate for a lead, for something to cling on to. So when Deep Throat appeared, it was like, this is exactly what he needed. And now we as the audience have known that Deep Throat's a little bit shadier than Mulder realizes. Mm-hmm. But it took Scully finally just calling this into question just for a second for him, I think, to really start getting his wheels turning.
And inside this envelope that Deep Throat gave him is a picture of a UFO hovering over a cop car. And Mulder shows this to Scully. Mulder and Scully hook back up. He is super excited about this evidence. This is the clearest evidence of a UFO he's ever seen. He's kind of matching details. They're looking at it with a magnifying glass. Scully thinks it's a fake, though, and wants him to go check.
And she has expert Photoshop skills.
Yeah, of course she does. Yeah, but she wants him to go get it checked out by the expert Photoshop people at the FBI. And Mulder gets kind of agitated with her and wants to leave. But Scully starts pleading and saying, look, it's so easy to see that your passion is so intense, but that same passion can be blinding. And while she respects it and while she, kind of honors that, others can use it against him. And she utters the most excellent line, "The truth is out there, but so are lies." Mm-hmm. And I just love that. I love her saying that to him so much. I'd love her just the truth is out there to Mulder, but you got to watch out for the lies. Just giving him exactly the stuff that he wants her to believe, that he wants to convince her of, but also with that level of reservation that Scully has to have right now. So,
and she's the only person who could bring him back down to earth. He's been manipulated for the entire season, and it's only when she questions it that he sees it. So, Mulder kind of leaves in a huff, and I thought he was just going to go rogue again.
Me too.
And run off without her. But when we catch up with him, that's not at all what happened. So, but he says thank you, and he leaves. So I guess it's the next day or whatever. She's back at the office. She brings her briefcase in. We see it standing up on her desk. She goes to get coffee. When she comes back into her office, the briefcase has been knocked over. She almost starts to notice something. She's like, wait a second, this isn't right. And then that's when Mulder walks in. And I think that she sort of just dismisses it, thinking oh, Mulder must have knocked this over.
I love this whole setup, because it's obviously part of the show, trying to make them paranoid, but it also makes me paranoid.
Right. Did it just fall over?
Exactly. When I was looking at it, I was like, what the fuck just happened? What's going on? I was kind of getting into the zone. They pulled me in that much where I was like, somebody knocked her bag over. That's important.
Something's up.
I need to note that down. And it's not. It's not important at all. Nothing happens to her purse for the rest of the episode, but I have it written down. And you and I are talking about it this long. It's just a moment, and it's so good.
Trust no one. Trust no one. But that's when Mulder comes in. And he says he had the photo analyzed, which I didn't think he was going to do. I thought he was going to blindly follow this thing. But he had it analyzed, and turns out, yep, this sucker's a fake. The reflection of the moon doesn't make sense. There's all these little details. You realize this is a grade A Photoshop.
And I love this, because it shows exactly why people respected Mulder in the first place. It's why he's able to do this job, is because he can... Even though he wants to believe these things and he's willing to open his mind to these possibilities, he's still going to analyze every bit of evidence to the nth degree to make sure that it's real. So even though he might just start a conversation off maybe it's a pyrokinetic, he's not going to believe it's a pyrokinetic until they can get some actual hard proof. Right.
Right. And yeah, so he followed through. He did what he had to do. But now he knows that Deep Throat deceived him. And I think one of them says that, this guy put in a lot of work to put us on the wrong track. Because, again, I'm joking about Photoshop, but you got to think about 1993. How easy is it to create this kind of a photo? I'm sure it wasn't impossible. Well, it's not at all, obviously. It was the 90s.
No,
I'm just saying,
I was very young on the internet looking at nude photos of Christina Aguilera that didn't actually exist. Right. So I'm sure somebody somewhere could do a UFO picture, I'm sure.
Right. They had that ability, but he had to put in the effort. He had to put in a little bit of work, and he's really working to, he cut the power to Mulder's apartment. So
yeah, of course. Yeah. We go to an aquarium where Mulder is meeting up with Deep Throat, and Mulder immediately confronts him about the photo being fake. And Deep Throat is like, man, that's took us a lot of work to do that. We didn't really think you would figure that out. I gotta get better Photoshop, guys, if y'all can figure this out.
And he almost makes himself seem half trustworthy again to Mulder, not to the audience, because he doesn't deny it at all, not even for a second. He's just like, oh yeah, but it's a lie hidden between two truths.
Yeah.
Really interesting here that they're at an aquarium looking at sharks, so that when he starts to, he can throw in a metaphor, don't stop swimming, Mulder, sharks, they die if they stop swimming, so don't stop swimming, Mulder. He says he's not the one who's listening.
Yes.
He does admit that. He says, I'm not the one who is listening, but I know that they can still hear you.
He also talks about how he risks his life talking to Mulder every time. But that he needed Mulder and Scully to be distracted to avoid releasing secrets in order to avoid like this public scare. And Mulder is like, why do you get to decide that? Like, when he starts listing off all of these like kind of secret agenda things that the government tried to hide and failed, that the public like was shocked at, but like it didn't cause a public stampede or anything. Like, it wasn't like a public scare. And he wonders like what could be so bad, basically. Like, why? And wonders when they'll be able to stop keeping secrets from the general populace. And it's like, I guess until men like you decide that, you know, we can.
Damn.
So interesting that he's pushing back against this guy quite a bit. And then, yeah, we end this with the, you know, shark who stops swimming dies, don't stop swimming. So Mulder goes home and just basically destroys his apartment looking for bugs and finds them in weird places.
It's going to be so frustrating to like destroy your bookshelf, like rip open your couch only to find it in one of the outlets.
Yeah. Start with the outlets, I think.
Like, start with the outlets.
Start with the outlets phones. And light bulbs. Start with the phones. Yeah. Although nowadays, like, I'm sure, like, since we all carry cell phones next to our NADs, like, I'm sure that we could just, they have full NAD scans on every single person.
They got one in my nuts right now.
Yeah. I've got an Apple chip. I've got a fucking, you know, silicon processor just in my NADs at all times at this point. So, like, I doubt it's very hard to hack me. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, he digs around. He eventually finds it, and just then that's when Scully stops by. She knocks on the door. So he goes over, and he starts kind of playing dumb, talking very loudly. Hey, let's just move on from this one. You know, I think it's time for us to give this up. And Scully's like, huh? What?
If you say so.
And then he writes her a note saying, like, we have to find the truck. She's able to pick up on what he's putting down, understands.
Yeah.
And this is the most X-Files, I think, an X-Files episode has ever been.
I love this.
Coming up.
Love this.
Like, They just start moving and grooving. They know they're being tailed, so they're doing all these different things. Like, Scully's ditching her tail by grabbing a taxi, going off to the airport. She buys one ticket with her credit card to one location, and she buys her a different ticket in cash to a different location. Mulder's doing the same shit. He's speeding through traffic, throwing off his pursuit, getting on the plane, flying to somewhere else. Like, they're moving and grooving.
I love this. They eventually meet up in Atlanta at a gift shop. Why did I say Atlanta? It's Las Vegas. Like, there's clearly casinos and everything going on. I don't know why I had Atlanta in my head. They meet up in the Las Vegas gift shop, and she says they found the truck and they need to head to Seattle. So they managed to get ahead of it and are waiting while Mulder is like kind of pontificating on the idea that this truck is traveling across America, like 16 feet away from people who have no idea they're next to an ET, like just have no clue, just think it's like, you know, auto parts or whatever. They see the truck, they start to follow, they follow the truck for hours. Eventually it's nighttime and their radio starts going nuts. We see flashing lights. The vehicle shuts off. They see the truck, which is now kind of turned around on the road with the back doors open. As they go to investigate, they realize that the truck driver is missing. The doors to the container are open. They climb in. They find like this red light, but they also find like what looks like it's some place for somebody to be asleep in time. Like, it looks like a container.
It looks like a container here, basically. Yeah, like something was being housed here, some creature. But interestingly, I loved this twist because I thought, oh, they got one step ahead of them. Mulder and Scully are one step ahead
Mulder,
of that guy.
Mulder's saying, before we get to the twist, Mulder's saying like, oh, we just saw a rescue operation right in front of us. Like, this is, and he's so excited about it.
But they get in there and he realizes, oh, shit. No, that's not what we just saw. They just tricked us.
They just
staged this, and he figured it out by doing the little tests with his stopwatches. The times didn't get messed up, so he knows this was not a close encounter. This is another hoax. They were on to us. They did all of this work just to throw us off. And Scully says something like, wouldn't it be easier to just kill us?
Yeah, like, this seems like way too much work.
And Mulder's like, no, they're using me against myself. Like, they're taking us down, or taking down this resistance by just manipulating me. He says there's still one person or one group who hasn't lied to them, and that's when he puts in a call to the lone gunman again.
Yeah. Well, and he also calls a bunch of UFO like sighting.
Oh, that's right.
Places where he's like, where they're like actively looking for UFOs, and they've kind of seen all of these, like, they follow everything to a place called Mottawa. I forgot to write down the state for this. Doesn't really matter. But they drive through this small town kind of looking for stuff, not finding anything, until they eventually see like a UFO party. This is just like people saw some UFOs in the sky and decided to get together and celebrate and have a good time, which these are my kind of people, my man. Like, if we saw a bunch of UFOs getting around, we'd definitely be lighting some bonfires and drinking some beers and dressing up in some hats, man. This is so much fun to me. Like, this is,
these guys are partying.
I love it. They're greeted by an they're greeted by an extremely friendly guy who says that they've seen ships over the last two nights, and they seem to be focused over some sort of like building. And then as Mulder like starts to investigate this building, he gets the binoculars out. He sees the truck driver leaving the facility, so he knows that this is where that they ended up. Whatever cargo he was carrying ended up at this facility.
It's nice that he was just right out front so they could catch a glimpse of him. Obviously, we see that they staked this place out. I think it's a power plant or something. It's not important.
Yeah.
So this place is high security. They're going to need some help getting in there. This is when he calls the lone gunman. And he's like, hey, how would you like a photo of an extraterrestrial biological entity? He's trying to bribe him here. He needs, and that's EBE, that's where we get the title of the episode, because Mulder needs some fake identification numbers to get in. And no sweat, these guys, just
no problem.
2 seconds, yep, we'll get it for you.
I've got a dot matrix printer and a fucking will to live, my man. I got this covered,
yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. So he gives them the info, we see Mulder and Scully, they pull up to the gate. They give the identification numbers, no problem. There's almost like a jump scare for a second where the guy yells at them to stop, and he's like, oh, make sure you keep these, you know, these badges on you while you're in there. They're looking to get to level 6 of this facility. I love the video game logic that we throw into here every once in a while, and they don't have the access codes.
They don't have level six. They need to get the red key card to get to level 6.
That's right. There's an armed guard guarding the door there. So yeah,
you're gonna need to find the clock hands for on level 5 and take them back down to level 3 so that you can unlock the clock, so that you can get the shotgun, so that you can take care of the guard, so that you can then access the red key card.
But they don't have time for that.
They don't have time for that.
They kind of like awkwardly like walk past the door and then realize there's nowhere else to go. And the guard is immediately like, that was weird. that was very suspicious of you two. So he's immediately like, okay, come with me. You guys have been caught. Good job. And then at that point, Mulder just fucking makes a run for it.
I love it. He just runs. He's like, okay, see you later, Scully. Like, see, I'm out of here. And it works. Like, he gets all the way to the bottom to level 6, and he gets to this spot where there's obviously like a room when there's got a window in it, and like there's red lights on the inside, just like we saw in the container on the truck. But as he's approaching the window to be able to get his look, he's surrounded by guards and at gunpoint. And this is when Deep Throat arrives. Deep Throat was already here.
He's like, okay, good job, everybody. Like, get out of here. I'll take it from here.
Yeah,
it's
he
all good.
Dismisses the guards, and then he begins to tell Mulder about a secret conference during the Cold War era, back in the Area 51 days, when the Roswell incident happened, where some major powers in the world, notably the United States, the UK, Russia, both Germanies at the time, which, as he mentions, which is kind of a cool thing, several other countries get together and say, like, okay, well, if these things are going to be falling out of the sky, if we're going to shoot them out of the sky, it's up to the country who they fall into to murder them. Like, we have to kill these biological entities before they can do anything weird. And Deep Throat says he's one of three men who has shot one, and he kind of describes it as a very harrowing experience. And again, we don't really know that he's telling the truth at this point. Like, I find, especially his comment earlier about a lie in between two truths, so who knows what is the actual thing that happened. But he seems relatively genuine when he says, you know, like, perhaps he didn't even know what a gun was, but like, there was this, or maybe they don't express emotion in their face, but there was this blank, almost innocent look, and, you know, when I shot him. And that's what he's doing with Mulder and Scully. He wants to use them to atone for some of the stuff that he has done, and maybe eventually the truth will be known throughout the world.
I like that we can't tell if he's bullshitting or not.
Me too.
And even if he is bullshitting, I think that there's still a little bit of truth in there somewhere. And it's so almost unbelievable, because, like, you're one of three people who's shot one of these things. Like, you've encountered and killed an alien, which seems so unbelievable. But at the same time, it's like, well, he has all this power, and this he just dismissed all those guards like it was nothing. Like, he's a head honcho. He's got some power around here. But I'm just really fascinated by Deep Throat. And I don't really remember how his storyline plays out, so I just don't know. I don't know what's true and what isn't. And I think that that's the perfect place to be as a member of the audience.
I agree. Yeah, I love almost every episode of The X-Files we've seen leaves at the end of the episode like some question, like what actually happened. We don't actually ever know, right? Like that seems to be the kind of almost the premise of the show in some way, is to leave you questioning the things around you, believing, trying to open your mind to the different possibilities of the world besides just the most simple, like rational ones. And this is one of the episodes that does it best, I think, because like you don't know. Like he's told Mulder that he actively lies to him and that he's using him, and then he's, you know, has this whole confession at the end, but you don't actually know that it's true. There's no evidence. It's not like he gave him pictures of fucking Eisenhower at the secret meeting or anything. So, and Mulder has to, of course, he's Mulder, so he has to step over and look it through the window. And there's nothing there. It's just an empty bed. This thing has already been killed.
He's left like speechless, and he just has to limp out because he hurt his leg. I don't know if that was a David Duchovny or a Mulder thing, but he hurt his leg in his, you know, flight down the stairs here.
I didn't look at the trivia for this episode, and I should have, because like, yeah, as he's like running to level six, he like tries to hurdle a barrier and just fucking face plants and like is limping through the rest of the episode. I'm wondering if it's like a early Sam season one thing where like he hurt his arm or whatever. Remember we had the sling for a little while? Anyway, it doesn't really matter, but it's very funny. Yeah, they limp outside the facility, and this dude just kind of leaves, and Scully arrives, and I think that she joins like watching Deep Throat kind of walk away into the fog or whatever, and I think Mulder at this point says that he's wondering which lie to believe, which is exactly how we feel as an audience, I believe, as the credits come up, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, and we get, again, that great lingering shot of Deep Throat walking off into the mist. And this is the first time that Scully's seen him. She didn't see his face, just his silhouette disappearing. And, yeah, very, very mysterious way to end the episode.
Exactly, yeah. Very good. I think this is, as far as, like, a myth arc episode, like, something that plugs us directly into, like, the overarching conspiracy that is The X-Files, this is a great episode. I mean, it's just, it's so much fun. It got me really involved in the tension and the whodunit and the spycraft and the, like, the, you know, the paranoia of it. Obviously, it introduces the lone gunmen, which are going to go on to be a huge... I just looked at their Wikipedia, and, like, they're in a bunch of episodes, so we will be seeing these people a lot.
Popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make some good TV here.
Yeah.
Good old-fashioned television.
This is good stuff.
And it's funny, we were just talking last week or the week before about how there's just been so many kind of like non-main plot stuff happening. You know, every episode's just been a random thing, and then we go right into it hard. There's so much stuff with Deep Throat, so much stuff with just literal aliens and UFOs and conspiracies. It covers everything that you want in an X-Files episode. And yeah, big fan.
Huge fan of this episode. Yeah, I like it a lot. It's just good stuff. Like you said, it's just good quality TV, man. Like this is what you came to the X-Files for. And it's kind of a weird thing for me. You said you remembered this episode quite a bit. I don't know if I've seen any of these episodes in season one, to be honest with you. Like I feel like maybe I just kind of missed, because my viewing of this was so weird. I would just randomly see episodes on, and so I don't know if I just randomly missed them or what. I don't know. So any last thoughts?
Oh, great episode.
Great episode. Thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for everybody for leaving reviews and comments and ratings and all that good stuff. This podcast grows by word of mouth. We don't really do any advertising for it. I guess I probably should, but who has the energy to deal with fucking marketing in 2024? But it so helps for you to tell your friends online or in real life about the podcast if they are X-Files friends, and we appreciate everybody that's been doing that. We'll be back next week with more X-Files, and until then, remember, everybody, stay spooky. Mosier. Very soft and smooth this morning. It's putting on my NPR voices.
I'm violently ill.
Are you really?
Not like flu, like like my stomach, but you know, it just like sucks the life out of you. You know.
I have some familiarity with the concept of things sucking the life out of
have,
you.
Yeah.
Are you good? Like, do you want to postpone this? We can kick it till Sunday, my man.
Oh no, I'm totally fine. I'm just like, I gotta get my energy up because I've been, you know, all day just me duele la stomaca. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I've been
in Spanish.
Very non-mobile all day today. I got out of bed and then just went and sat on the couch and then just like laid my head over on a dog and just laid there. I didn't even go to sleep. I just laid there for a couple hours. It was ridiculous.
It's like, it's the double-edged sword of being able to work from home because I was, you know, I was sick, but I was able to keep working and that was fine. I didn't have to call out. But on the other hand, if I had to go into the office, I would have just called out because I was sick. So and it's like, well, then I would have rested and been able to like feel better instead of still working all day. So I don't know. It's a complicated issue, but I'm fine. I'm just like, you know, I'm just tired.
Well, I hope you feel better. I hope we can reinvigorate you.
Yeah, let's get some. This is a good episode of The X-Files, but we're not there yet. We're still in the outtakes.
I had some coffee because I made an espresso, which I haven't really been drinking coffee much lately. Changed over to a tea man, as you may know. But I had an espresso, or I'm having an espresso right now because my energy is also feels like bottom of the barrel low.
So. I should have done that.
Should have went and got your espresso machine out of the closet and then do some stuff with it.
Just gotten jacked up. All right, I gotta get myself jacked up.
You gotta get jacked up. You gotta get jacked up and locked in. You gotta get JU'd and
LI. I'm not even locked in. The one episode where there's somebody declares that they're locked in.
You gotta lock it down. First, you gotta lock it down, and then you gotta lock it in.
I'm feeling a lot of, I think, just disappointment from my experience with FF7 last night.
Yeah, so explain to me, because I just assumed that when they released that demo that all of your progress would just transfer to the main game and you would just pick up from where you left off. But you played the demo again last night.
And big mistake, because in FF16, I think that's how it worked. You just could skip the whole intro section.
Yeah.
So that's exactly how I thought that this was going to be. So I spent the night, and I got sick last night. That's when it started. So I'm already feeling like awful and just like going back and forth to the TV. But I was like, I want to replay the demo because I played this a couple weeks ago and I want it all to be fresh in my mind. And I kind of rushed through it a couple nights ago. So I want to just be like to get everything and see everything and then hop into the full game with that. Plus, I was so eager to play the game, I thought, well, I'll do the demo. So I went through the entire sequence, which is, you know, it's cool, but it's really, really long. And there, when you finally start the real game, you can carry over that save data, but you can only skip a portion of that intro, which was really annoying. And I'm like, whatever, I literally just did this 25 minutes ago.
So
now
annoying.
It's midnight and I'm playing the same thing that I just played again. So I only ended up playing about like 10 minutes of it.
And you haven't had any time to play all day because you've been working and now you're podcasting. Yeah. And like, this is a big deal.
Because I'm still kind of annoyed at it. So like, I think I needed this space. I needed to focus on something else.
Okay. Because you're still a little aggravated about the whole situation.
Yeah, I was a little aggravated about it. Okay. Because then the other thing was there's a piano playing mini game and you pick up sheet music and then you sit down at the piano and you like do a little rhythm game. And I did it like 100 times in the demo because it was like really fun. I was trying to perfect it. In the main game, I had to replay that same section. And so Cloud sits down at the piano and then I wasn't able to like choose the sheet music. It just didn't show up. So now I'm thinking, did I miss something? I reloaded it twice to see if I missed something or did it just not work? Cause I pulled my save data over from the demo, but that was another thing that really, really pissed me off. So now I was like, okay, I need a minute away from this. Like I was so hyped about this and all I'd done is disappoint myself. I don't think that's the game's fault. I think that's on me. So
it's the way you approach the game. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll play it tonight once I'm good and comfortable and, I'm not too stressed about it.
Good. I'm glad. I've seen some people playing the videos, playing that little piano mini game on TikTok, and they're doing stuff like Runaway and that one My Chemical Romance song about going to the parade.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the name of that song. Is it the song just called Black Parade?
It's just called the Black Parade,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. It's a real depressing parade. I don't know if anybody's ever told that guy that. Gerald. Yeah. Gerald?
Yeah. Gerald.
Gerald White. Is that his name? Is that that dude's name?
It's Gerard Way.
Yeah, yeah. I was pretty close. You got to admit, that was White. Pretty close.
No, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
For pulling that off the top of my head.
I got it.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Considering I've like never owned that, you know, any of their music or anything. I only know like a handful of their songs. Yeah. I was not an emo guy. I was kind of jealous of emo kids, to be honest with you. Like, they seemed like they were having a good time. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I think everybody was pretty miserable. It was just kids. It was really, that's what it felt like. It's weird when I think, I mean, obviously people who grew up with it still enjoy it. That's fine. I'm not like gatekeeping what age you're allowed to like that kind of music. But me and all my friends were 15 or 16 when the Black Parade came out. Great age to be at. But I know a lot of like people then who were way older were like also emo kids, even though they were adults. So sure. There's always been a little bit of confusion for me there.
Yeah, I remember seeing like this, there was a scene, right? Like,
yeah, it was
and there was like people that were, you know, 18, 19 to 21, 22, maybe. Even up to like the 23s and 24s of like going to bars and playing and like listening to this music and seeing these bands and everything. And I just remember it like seeing it as an online experience, like seeing,
yeah,
and just knowing that I was too old for it. Like I felt that even in, if I was like in the age group, I was like, no, this is definitely not for me. This is just not for me.
It's very funny that, and I've said it a million times, my first concert was My Chemical Romance because I was whatever 15 or 16, but it was just I hadn't ever gone to a concert. I just, mine just was, never happened.
Mine was Tanya Tucker and Alan Jackson, which is a combination of characters right there, let me tell you.
I remember when I was in fifth grade, about like 50% of my elementary school all had tickets to go see what it was, either NSYNC or Backstreet Boys, and I've never felt more left out. I didn't want to go to that concert, but when I came to school the next day and everybody single was freaking kid, boys and girls, everybody had this goddamn t-shirt on, I was like, what the hell, mom and dad? I think my sister might have went too, so I was like, why was I in on this? What's going on?
I've probably told you this before, but I went to a ZZ Top concert. And one of the opening bands was named Jackal. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jackal.
I haven't heard of Jackal. That's a good band name, though.
Jackal's a great band name. They had a couple of gimmicks. One is like they could make the guitar talk, which I thought was very impressive.
Yeah,
like
that's always fun.
Yeah. And then they like brought like chainsaws out and on the stage and like sawed some wood or something. Like they were big into like metal. Like I feel like they were like, oh, it's heavy metal, so we need to like destroy stuff
bring
on stage
some heavy
or whatever.
Metal,
yeah. But I remember that being a really like just eye opening. Like I bought the CD at the concert and like did the whole like bought a shirt and did the whole thing. Like I was really really impressed by their ability to make the guitar talk. Not realizing that is such a horrible gimmick. Like it's just a voice box going through a fucking guitar. Like it doesn't really matter. But it's just, you know, at the time I was 13, 14 years old and just thought it was the best thing. So
I saw Nutramilk Hotel did a little revival thing. I was in my early 20s, so it was like 15, 10 years ago, somewhere around there. And we get into this theater. We're excited. You know, they never had played in my lifetime. You know, they had broke up in the 90s. So I just this was an exciting moment. And then this motherfucker comes out with a giant handsaw and they start warbling it and making some whining sound with it. And I'm just looking around. I'm like, are we all just accepting that this man's playing the saw right now? Is that how they always did this sound?
Have I told you that Nutrimilk Hotel is like, they're from the place I was born?
I did not know that, no.
Yeah, yeah, they're from Ruston, Louisiana. They formed and then ultimately broke up in Ruston. And like, I knew people that knew those people, but like not in any significant way. And I never considered them like a serious band until like I heard them on, there was a really quick joke on Parks and Rec about Nutrimilk Hotel.
Yeah. That's isn't that April's favorite band?
Yeah, yeah. But I think they're doing like a honeymoon game and Andy's like, yeah, I thought you wanted to go to the Nutrimilk Hotel. Like he just doesn't, and was like, oh, wait, I think I know those guys. And Autumn's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I think that like, I think I know people that know those people. The weird situation.
It's always a little bit weird when, I mean, I've done it in the Discord a couple of times. There's a couple of bands from my hometown that like eventually made it big in like the, I guess the emo scene or whatever. So they had played with a guy from Fall Out Boy and whatever.
Yeah.
And so I that was like my claim to fame, as if I was playing with
Fall Out
Boy.
Yeah, as if you had done anything at all.
As if I didn't just like go to a couple shows of these kids that I went to high school with and was friendly with, but then suddenly I'm like, yeah, now I was basically in the band.
Man, talking about music, I know I texted you a bunch about this, but I just cannot believe. So listeners, recently I went through a process and I'd organized like we set up a little like vinyl like listening station in our kitchen. So it's a little cabinet. It's got all of our records. It's got all of our cookbooks. It's very cute. It's got a like a vinyl player. And when I did that, I was like, I'm going to go through the process because many times I've almost ordered the same record twice where I've been like, oh, like Mike Eagle is repressing, you know, Dark Comedy. I already own it. So I don't need to buy this.
Yeah.
So I went ahead and cataloged everything using the Discogs app, which is very convenient for this kind of thing. It's still kind of a pain in the ass to do, but they have a barcode scanner, which works. But a lot of vinyl does not have barcodes on it. Like it's not that kind of product. But you can search it up and generally you can pretty quickly find what you're looking for and like the specific colors and the colorways and things like that. And then Discogs like not only has the cataloging thing, but it also has like the buy sell thing. So you can like see records that are like when you type in a record and you're like, you find it and it shows you like what it's been selling for, like right as you search for it. And you're like, I'm like looking at some of this stuff and it's like, oh, this Near album is worth like $400. Like
who is buying
the Near record for $500, like for close to $500? The Katamari Damacy record from Mondo is almost worth $500. And I know it's just
wild.
Yeah, and it's just scarcity, right? Like it's just just that like Mondo specifically, and like a lot of these like I think small time producers of this stuff, like they make limited quantity runs, and like it's people snag them up, and then they.
There's been a huge vinyl shortage for the last couple of years.
Yeah, that seems to have gotten better though.
I think genuinely a big part of it was
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift, just because she suddenly they had that deal with Target or whatever. To pump out like millions of copies of these vinyl records, and anytime you go to a Target store, you will see rows and rows and rows and rows and rows of Taylor Swift vinyl, because the intersection of Taylor Swift fans and vinyl fans is a little bit smaller than I think most people would probably assume. Most people producing this stuff would assume, because everybody who's buying her music isn't buying the vinyl. If we're lucky, maybe they'll get the CD, but they're probably just getting it on, you know, Apple Music or Spotify. You know, they're not.
I don't know some of those hardcore girlies though. I can see them like buying the CD and the vinyl.
And I'm not saying it's not like a worthwhile thing to have, but when you know the biggest artist in the world gets the monopoly on the vinyl market.
Yeah, all of the, because it's relatively like it's hard to produce stuff, like especially for like local, because a lot of the vinyl I get are underground hip hop stuff. Like so, I ordered. Trying to think of an example. It took one album, it took like a year to come in after I ordered it.
Wow.
It just took that long to produce the copies. And then the last one, which was Blockhead's The Ox, which if you haven't heard that album, it's just fantastic. Blockhead does all of the production. He's got like a different rapper on every fucking song, and it's just great.
Hell yeah.
But that came in within like 4 months, I want to say. But even then, it still seems long. Like if you were thinking about like, I want to buy this, right?
And
I want to have it in my hand.
It's always like... Yeah, I want to buy this thing and then listen to it, but it's like, no, you have to pre-order it now, and if you don't pre-order it now, you're not getting it.
Yeah, there's so you're gonna have to wait. Unless
the
there
longest
happens
I waited,
to be extra
I
copies.
Think, right, the longest I waited was the Persona 4 vinyl, which I think took almost 2 years to get to me, which is and I don't think I've listened to it since. the time had passed.
That's the thing that I'm having trouble with. Number one, the vinyl player we got broke, so I can't even listen.
Sucks,
to after I did all of this stuff, like, and set it up and made it all pretty, like, can't even play a record. So I've got new equipment coming soon, which I'm very excited about. But the just the like, and part of the reason that we did this is so I could listen to more vinyl music. Like I wanted to actually, like I have these records, I should listen to them, right? So that's like, I didn't really have a listening area. Like all of the records were scattered across the house in piles and stacks and like just garbage time. And then, you know, just it's hard to justify doing that when it's so easy to just Bluetooth and Spotify the same album that you might be listening to on the vinyl. So I don't know.
But you get to see that sweet, sweet art. I have a really great, I guess you call it a picture disc, right? Or it's a Final Fantasy VIII vinyl, and it has this art from the game on it. But I'm like, I don't want to run this one because I don't want the. It's the same thing with FF7, actually. I don't want to ruin the art.
You don't want to ruin everything on it. Yeah, I'm curious. Let's look up Final Fantasy VIII on the Discogs. I just typed
I'm curious.
I typed in VOOO instead of I.
Perfect. Woo.
So there's a couple of different copies here. There's a bunch of different copies. This is 2x vinyl LP limited edition numbered picture disc. This is probably the one that you have, if I had to guess.
Sounds like it.
That is. It's got just a big picture of fucking Squall and a sword on the front.
Yeah, that makes. Yeah, it checks out.
Is that what the vinyl looks like too?
Yeah, the vinyl looks like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
is this him with the sword and the fire on the sword?
Yeah. 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 Okay. So the highest this thing has sold for is $293.
Okay. Well.
The median is $189.
I think I spent like $30 on it. Maybe? Yeah, I don't remember.
I'm telling you, dude, video game vinyl is better than fucking, I don't know what to tell you, just about anything else. I don't have the password saved, so I can't log in, but it shows you, it also gives you a total of what your collection is worth, and it's based on like recent sales and things like that, so I don't necessarily think it's accurate, but like it's really bizarre putting in, I think I had almost exactly 69 records, and it's really bizarre coming back and seeing it that's worth like over $6,000. You're like,
that's
what,
wild.
What
that's
in the wild, fuck? Dude. Yeah, and it's only like, because
wait,
it's,
did I spend that much?
Yeah, exactly. That's what you think, right? It's like, holy shit. Yeah. Oh my God, how much money have I sunk in this stuff? But I didn't. Yeah. Like you said, like all of the stuff, like today I bought the Norco soundtrack. I don't know if you remember me playing that game or not. The Norco soundtrack, and that was worth like, I mean, that I bought that for like $30 or whatever, and like I know for a fact nobody is going to make any more of those records. Like right. that's just not going to happen. So
right. What about the Shadow of the Colossus one? What's that one worth?
When I looked, it was like $260.
That makes sense, because that one's not available to stream anywhere or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, you could import the CD, I suppose. Obviously that stuff's on YouTube as well, but that's the type of thing where I feel like there is a little bit more value in it.
Let's see, Shadow of the Colossus. I think you and I both have the same set. Which
we have
the same one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. The high on that was $134.
Okay.
As of February 21st.
Maybe there's been further productions of it or something.
Could be. Yeah. Could be. This is from the I Am 8-Bit one.
Okay.
They do have some other editions of this stuff that are just kind of fascinating to look at. Like, oh, you know, here's like the CD or whatever, or here's a rock album that I guess is based on this thing or something. Like it's, you can find some weird shit.
Yeah.
And the big problem I have is that once you log in and get everything set up, you can just like add. So like I have this band that I really like called 13 and God. So I just went through and added all of their vinyl stuff to my wanted list. And like almost immediately it was like, oh, it's on sale for here. It's $150 for this, you know, seven inch. And I'm like,
I don't know about that.
I want the full collection though. I got to have the full collection.
I have so many random things. Like my sister for a little while, she would get me vinyl for my birthday and stuff. And she only knew like three different bands that I liked. So I have a bunch of like Cure records and a bunch of Smith's records and stuff like that. And I'm like, this doesn't fit in with all the video game stuff, but thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, it's good stuff. It's fun when people just know that you have the one interest, right? Mm-hmm. And they just give you the one thing over and over again.
You know what? That's fine.
Autumn gets, like, as you might imagine, just all kinds of horse stuff. Just horses on horses on horses.
I bet. And it's never a saddle. It's never the real deal shit, right?
No. Well, because you can't really buy somebody a saddle. Like, a saddle is such a personal purchase. Like,
it just sounds like such, like that'd be a dope gift if somebody just got you like a really kitted out.
Like I have technically gotten her a saddle for like Christmas or whatever, but it's like she buys it and she's like, this is my Christmas present. I'm not, because there's a whole lot of decisions. You would be amazed at the differences in saddles that are out there, man.
One of them is, you know, probably increases your attack damage. One of them makes you ride faster.
Exactly. Yeah. One of them has like, it's like +2 to tricks. So if you want to do tricks.
And I don't know how she's specking. I don't know what her build is.
Yeah. Well, it's mostly Western dressage nowadays. So it's a lot of cowboy up stuff.
Yeah. You got to go for the cowboy buffs for sure.
Let's talk about the X-Files.
Let's do it.
You know, I haven't looked at our stats in a while. I have network analytics set up on our three main shows. So that's Non-Human Biologics, Still Is Kingdom Keeps. I think Thinking Faces in there too, and then Monster of the Week. So four shows. We have traditionally always done way more on Apple Podcasts than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not true anymore.
Wow.
Spotify is literally 50% of our listeners right now.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I mean, Spotify, I don't talk to people who use Apple Music. I know Apple Music and podcasts are different, but Spotify is the popular music app, and if they suddenly integrate podcasts, why would you not just use one app for everything?
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it makes sense. Like, it's just right there, but it's kind of crazy.
That is crazy. Maybe it's I don't know what that would reflect. I imagine like Spotify is like the a younger person's go to, even though you use it, obviously. And
but I don't use it for podcasts. Like, I don't.
True. I feel like an old man, by the way, because I've used iTunes. The fact that I call it iTunes is the problem. But I've used that since I was like 14, you know. So I feel like, okay, this is dated. This is, nobody's doing this anymore. I'm the dinosaur here. So, and I picture Spotify as the newer, shinier thing. All right, X-Files, you ready?
I am.
Oh,